New Skype for Mac has the absolute world's worst user interface of all programs. It started ringing, and I'm like, okay, where do I click to answer it? And the only button that was there was like a little telephone handset, but it was the hang-up button.
Oh, I see.
They've been getting a lot of criticism, the Skype people, for having come up with a new Mac version, which is worse than awful.
I don't think Mac is their lead platform.
No, but I mean, they just redesigned this, and they like put a lot of effort into a whole new version that is unbearably strange.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it depends how politically correct you want to be, but Skype is honestly, it's a tool for people that are cheap, and people that are cheap don't really buy Macs, to be honest.
I thought it was
you.
Also for Euros, and all the Euros have Macs.
It is. It is for making long-distance calls without getting, you know, absolutely
reamed.
Can
we say reamed on a podcast?
I know. Well, that's why I'm now all hesitant, because Joel's like, we're doing a podcast. I'm like, wait, I don't even remember how that works.
How does that work? Well, let me see if I can remember some of the podcast principles. Number one, and I'm writing this down. Number one,
laugh in a timely fashion at Joel's joke. That's what I remember.
Exactly. I used to have to edit out the small pause before you realized you were supposed to laugh. In order to make it sound like you were laughing
about
at
it actually
my joke,
funny? I don't know.
Instead of at
Did
me,
a slight laugh. No, that wasn't actually. Joel was right. It was a lag issue because we've talked about this before. But like, it you have to really concentrate to listen, you know. And plus, like, you don't want dead air. And actually, we're going to be editing now, right? So Alex is helping.
Yes.
Alex is a new hire.
Yes.
At Stack Exchange, and he's doing a great job so far. And hopefully, he'll be editing out the long pauses between me laughing heartily.
Right.
At Joel's jokes.
Exactly.
Yes. Laugh track.
We might have a laugh track too. Now, okay, so that was number one principle. Number two principle is that it's just the normal weekly call that we have every week anyway. Are we still doing that though?
Because I thought one of the reservations you had, which I agreed with, was there needed to be more structure
to the podcast.
Couldn't necessarily be, a little bit more. Not a lot more. I'm not talking like, but just, you know, getting guests on because that's
We will have a lot of guests. Yeah, we may have to do a really, really long podcast and edit out the parts that are just us talking. Okay.
I think this part is actually relevant to the podcast because people are probably wondering why there was a year-long hiatus.
Well, there was a bit of a hiatus.
And, you know, parts of it I agree with, parts of it I didn't. But on the whole, I saw where you were coming from.
We were busy.
Yeah, well, I kind of wanted to talk about a lot of stuff we were doing in a more public way. So
well,
that
let's,
part
you know what, let's do some, there's going to be some catching up. Oh, I know what we could do. We could have a part of every podcast that's like Blast from the Past, in which we take something that happened during the hiatus and present it as if it was news today.
Right, just more structure, I think, was one of the things you were looking at.
New, Area 51.
Right.
I think we'll, now that we have producer Alex here, we'll be able to get guests, and we can just sort of give him a list of people, and he can start to line them up, and it won't be so
I do
fun.
Want to talk about something on the podcast that I thought was interesting, because once, for the longest time, pretty much all of Joel's call with me, that was pretty much all the interaction I had with Joel every week, was the call that people basically heard on the podcast. There might be a little part at the end where we did some sort of private businessy stuff that wasn't, you know, it's like, who cares, and you know, stuff has to happen. But for the most part, when Joel and I talked, it was all sort of on the record in a very, very public way.
It was.
And once we went, once
all
we went
14
off,
of our listeners.
Yeah. And once we went off the record, like, it got a little weird. Like, I think it was just such a big shift that it kind of changed the tone of the way Joel and I talked, and not necessarily in a good way. I kind of wanted to go back on the record at some point. It's like, I felt like, I don't know. It's and Joel and I had a conversation on this that you had mentioned, Joel, that you thought would make over the podcast about sort of the correlation with WikiLeaks. It's like, what if you had a government? We're the government of Stack Exchange, right?
We are. We're the benevolent dictators for life.
So how is it? It's almost better to have a government that's I don't want to say radically transparent, because there's like military stuff and stuff that you have to have secrets. I get that. And like, sex is secret. We're not going to talk about that.
Right.
But just in general, as much as you can, to do as much in public as possible, because we're that's the premise of our sites, right? Like,
right.
You go on the site, you do stuff in a public way, you don't put it in an email silo, you don't put it on this mailing list that only two people are going to read, and, you know, Google's going to have trouble indexing. You do it out there in the world where everybody can see it.
Right.
And I felt like that was kind of almost like a lesson of WikiLeaks, like all the unrest that happened as a result of that, and like governments were overturned that probably should have been anyway.
Well, no,
you know, it turned out that this radical transparency was kind of
the right thing.
A little bit painful.
I'm trying
but
to remember. I think the thing about WikiLeaks is it was sort of underwhelming. Nobody was all that surprised because the stuff leaks out anyway.
Right,
it's
but, for,
people
but
thought.
To be on the record is huge.
Yeah.
Right. For so everybody knows that like X government is corrupt or whatever.
Right. Hopefully so I will go on the record as saying that the craziest meta of all the stack exchanges, the meta with the people who are the most certifiably insane and most need hospitalization in an institute of mental health is, oh, I can't say it now. It's too, they're going to hate me. They already think you hate them.
Yeah. Let's just, how can we say this?
Yeah.
Every meta has its own tone.
Every meta has its own tone. Exactly. There you
but
go.
I will say that some communities have really surprised me with sort of how far outside the norm they are. I do want to say that I was actually defending this to Joel today. I think for them that is the norm. Like there's just certain norms in certain communities that are not what we're used to, like even a little.
Okay.
And it can be kind of jarring.
Yes.
And I think that's part of what community is. Like you don't necessarily have to – everybody has to get along. Like we're all the 50 United States. You can't have states seceding from the union. That doesn't really work for us. So you have sort of similar values at a high level, but you also have states like, let's go to, okay, wow, this is getting really political. Arizona, right, is doing crazy things. Like, and I think they're a little crazy, but hey, they're Arizona. They get that's the part of being a state is like having the wherewithal to come up with these crazy things that they're going
to
do.
Yeah, Arizona's trying to amend rules to prevent the election of Obama as president because he's Kenyan or something. Anyway.
Well, exactly. Yeah. We don't need to get super political, but my point is I actually think that's within the boundaries of what states are designed to do. They're designed to accommodate, you know, the whims and the preferences of the people that live in that state. And if they get a little wacky at times, hey, you know, that's what democracy is. That's my point. Is like I would rather have a healthy meta where people are really sort of engaged and, you know, getting really excited about stuff and sometimes maybe going in the wrong direction versus one where they don't care. You know, where they're like, you know, who cares? We're Arizona. And,
that is
you know.
Very idealistic of you. I actually have some interesting statistics today, which you, okay. Jeff, you probably don't know.
I probably don't.
No. But I'm going to test you on them anyway.
All right.
Okay. So I've been studying, you know, we have the Stack Exchange sites. Let me create some definitions here. Definition number one, we got the Trilogy and the Stack Exchange. So let's just go based on domain name. Basically, Stack Exchange is everything except Stack Overflow, Server Fault, and SuperUser.
Okay.
Okay, and then what I did is I divided up all of the people who post on our sites, either typing a question or an answer. I divided them into three categories. The first category is people whose very first account was an account on Stack Overflow. They might have accounts on other sites, but their first account was on Stack Overflow, and I call those people programmers.
Okay.
I'm using very elegant terminology here. Then there's people whose first account was on Server Fault or SuperUser, and I call them geeks. There's not very many of them compared to programmers, so don't worry about the geeks too much. And then I have a category called civilians, and those are people whose first account was on a non-Trilogy Stack Exchange site. Like, they just came as cooking.
That seems like reasonable definitions to
me. Yeah, so programmers versus civilians. So what I wanted to figure out is, you know, how many programmers do we have versus civilians on Stack Exchange? On the Stack Exchange sites. So first of all, what would be your guess as to the civilian population of the Stack Exchanges, just percentage-wise?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say, wow, this is you're really putting me on the spot here. Yeah. Across the entire Stack Exchange network?
Across the entire Stack Exchange network, not the Trilogy.
I'm going to say like 40%.
Wow. You cheated.
No, I didn't. That's actually me guessing.
Totally cheated.
No, I didn't cheat. I swear. No cheating. I haven't actually looked at this. I don't know.
36%.
Okay. Well, that's reasonable. I mean, I think the thing you got to realize is like I'm in there looking at those sites pretty a lot.
Yeah.
Like I have a pretty good sense of what's going on in our network.
Yeah, but still, this is
what I like to call my job.
Okay. Now, all right. And in fact, you know, we can put up some charts somewhere or something. But basically, the programmers and geeks are about 60%. Programmers are about 6%. The geeks are about 4%. That's you know the server faults. Forget about them. But it's basically 60-40. That's approximately the ratio. And it hasn't changed much. This is surprising because I thought there would be a growing civilian population. Mm-hmm. But the ratio of civilians to programmers... Ooh, something just binged on my desktop.
I didn't hear it.
Oh, weird.
Actually, this is... Oh, wait, podcast bingo. We can bring that back because at some point in the show, Joel makes a sound. He's like, what the?
What was that sound?
This is like we never stop. It's great.
Okay. We started with, when we started the Stack Exchange, we had about 80% programmers, which is obvious. Like we started with mostly people that had come from Stack Overflow. Although right. even in the very early days of Stack Exchange, 20% of the first accounts that were created in the first month, let's say, were people that had never created an account on Stack Overflow. They were completely new to our network as far as we knew, which is sort of surprising. So I thought it would have taken them a while to figure that out. It grew, the number of civilians grew from about 20% to what it is today, which is 36%. But then it kind of got stuck. It got stuck in November at 36% and has not changed. The ratio of civilians to programmers on the Stack Exchange network has been stuck at 36% civilian. Now, obviously, everything is growing, so the number of civilians is going way up and the number of programmers is going way up. They're just going up at the same rate. And I think that may just be, the huge growth of Stack Overflow accounts. And also, people may come in, discover one of the civilian sites and then decide to make an account, but just make it on Stack Overflow first for some reason.
Well, this isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, part of our mission, outside of programmers, say, hey, we like programmers so much, we think programmers are really smart people, which I believe this, right? Like, we're programmers, we're smart, we have a great way of looking at problems, a way of solving problems, a way of building things that I respect deeply, mm-hmm. If it's done right. And extending that to other topics was the goal. Certainly was to play the, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game where you have programmers that are sysadmins that like homebrewing or bicycling or whatever. So that's okay, but you also hit on a very good point, which is that we gotta eventually get beyond that. I mean, you have to eventually get past
right. The
1-2 degrees.
The reason I've been doing this experiment is I'm wondering, when will we have enough civilians who are just not connected to programming who will help us create the sites that just don't overlap with programmers for various reasons? So, for example, I think that law and medicine don't overlap with programmers because those are both gigantic, difficult professions and very few people that are both lawyers and programmers or both doctors and programmers. And so it's going to be very hard for us to get law or medicine off the ground with our programmer audience. So I've been thinking, gosh, we got to wait for the civilian audience to grow to the size of our programmer audience, and then maybe they'll be able to create law and medicine Stack Exchanges.
But it's exciting, too, because, our big, hairy, audacious goal, we had our corporate retreat thing was like a year ago. We were trying to figure a lot of this out. Can you believe it's only been 1 year? A little over a year since we had no Area 51. We had no plan. We had no vision. But that was the big, hairy, audacious goal, was to eventually get this to be an average internet user would encounter one of our sites. And that's really exciting because I think then you're really changing things in a positive way on the internet. And actually just today – and over the last couple of days, someone I respect deeply, Jason Kotke, is sort of – we're now sort of on his radar more. Like he was talking about Stack Overflow.
About StackOverflow.com.
He's also sort of – he just alluded today to Slee Stack Overflow, which is, again, the process of creating a site like Stack Overflow on a different topic, which I think he was getting at. And, I pinged him to point him towards Stack Exchange, but, I think he's exactly the type of – really smart person that sort of gets our mission to increase the signal to noise ratio on the internet, not just for programmers, but ideally for a lot of groups where it works. I mean, we're not sure. And one thing that I think Joel has been very cool about and agreeing with me, and I'm glad we have total agreement on this, is that we say up front, look, we're not sure our engine will work for all topics. Like, we're going to try a bunch of things. And that's what, for example, we just launched the Area 51 site. It's in private beta. How things work. We have to be careful how we say that, because there's like 50 different trademarks that are all like within 2 characters of that.
Yeah.
We're not really sure this is going to work, but the community voted for it, and that was the process, and it went through the Area 51 process. So, we're going to give it a shot and see what happens. But we'll also not be shy about saying, look, this isn't working. This isn't making the internet better, right? Like, we're not actually creating things of value that we're proud to be associated with and the community is proud to be associated with. So we pull those down. And for example, let me just list where that's happened just to enumerate our failings. Atheism did not work. Very definitively did not work.
Yeah.
That went on for a while.
Yeah.
AI didn't work.
Nope, not enough practitioners were actually on that site.
And electronic gadgets didn't work largely because that was kind of our fault for proposing that. The scope was really
not
too
enough.
Big.
The scope is too big for the number of people that were there, and so the chances that anybody seeing a question would actually know the answer to that question were very slim because of the wide.
The, The failures are interesting because they, I think they teach us a little bit about like where we shouldn't be going.
Yeah.
You know, like, or ways to maybe adapt and avoid those pitfalls. But I do want to say that one particular thing that surprised me about atheism, although I had a lot of reservations about that site, not the topic, like I have no problem with atheism as a topic, but just as a site, I was like, this doesn't really make sense to me. This isn't a good match for Engine, which was proven out in the end. But we got like some amazingly good users from that site that although even the topic isn't there for them anymore, they were brought in to the network. They were like, oh, wow.
Now. Yeah.
They were like, oh, wow, the engine is awesome. And they totally get the mission of like, wow, you want to increase signal-to-noise ratio. I love that. Let me help you do that. And they're totally involved.
Right.
And if we hadn't launched an atheism site, I'm not sure we would have gotten those users. So even the failures, I think, are building a path to building.
Okay, so now I got a non – now here's the next part of my quiz question for you. We have a handful of sites. And I broke down this whole civilian versus programmer ratio thing per site. Like I broke it down, you know, Android, Apple, Bicycles, Cooking, CS Theory. I went through every single one and did a little chart of how many programmers versus how many civilians. Remember, programmers, people that used to have, that came in originally from Stack Overflow. Civilians never had an account on Stack Overflow. They came into a Stack Exchange site first. Might not be that Stack Exchange site. So, for example, if somebody's first site was English and they went to Cooking, they would still be called a civilian on Cooking. So which do you think are our most programmery sites? Sorry.
Least.
Which are our least? Yes. Which are our most civilian sites? Just throw some names of some Stack Exchanges out there that you think are highly civilian.
I might say Math.
Okay.
That's one I would maybe look at.
I'm
going to go to stackexchange.com. You know, honestly, I have to go to our directory, stackexchange.com.
Try to remember
sites.
The names of these damn sites.
Well, no, I just want to scroll through and refresh my memory. Tech is going to have a lot of overlap. Apple. This is much harder than your first question.
It is. And I'm probably not giving...
I'm almost not willing to answer because I'm not sure I'll even get close.
Well, all right.
I almost want to say that the ones that are just so general purpose, like money, on startups, this is tough. This is really tough because I think like parenting, for example, is going to have a huge overlap with programmers.
Well, I haven't done, there's not enough data for parenting, so I didn't include that in the analysis, but because it's a new site. All right. Well, I'll just tell you
the
answer.
That's the best I got. Those are the only two I'm even comfortable saying.
I'm going to tell you the answer. It's going to blow your mind.
Okay. I'm preparing to...
Now, what I'm listing, these sites are all dominated by non-Stack Overflow users, and they are Computer Science Theory, Geographic Information Systems, Math, you got that one right, On Startups, kind of makes sense, data's a little weird because it's imported, Physics, Statistics, Tech, Ubuntu, and increasingly WordPress. Wasn't always that way, but now WordPress is.
The tech one really surprised. That's probably the most surprising one of the ones you listed.
It surprised to me because these are all geeky fields. I thought it was going to be Cooking in English.
Stats and GIS, I almost said, but I wasn't really willing. I wasn't sure. Those were like ones that I thought it might be true.
Mm-hmm.
CS Theory, I guess I should have in retrospect because...
Really? You didn't think... I thought CS Theory... I mean, if you'd asked me...
That's not fair. I mean, I probably wouldn't have called that one up front, but... I don't know. I mean, that community is – well, how many – okay, Joel. How many times on the previous podcast we brought up this big disconnect between engineering and computer science?
Yeah,
right?
But still, you think it's
– this is like proof that it's true.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, some of these things – like in the case of math, it was sort of an outside community that we kind of inherited in a sense, like not in bulk, but it was kind of – you know, these people were talking about math on the internet before we existed, and they just – happened to have landed in our little nest of the world. Similarly, I can see how Ubuntu is, because of the Ask Ubuntu relationship, it brought in a lot of people that weren't familiar with the network. Similar on Stardust, because of Dharmesh, he brought in people that weren't part of the network. Some of these things really surprised me, though. Like, I'm sort of surprised that, for example, the English site is kind of dominated by the programmers. As is the Cooking site, although it's starting to get some civilian uptake in Cooking. Apple, photography, those sites all have just a ton of people that came from Stack Overflow. Bicycles. The most civilian feeling sites are paradoxically the most full of people that originally came from Stack Overflow.
Yeah, like photography, for example, I can almost tell you would be a lot of programmers.
Yeah, photography is a lot of programmers. Exactly. It hasn't. It's very odd that way.
Now, this is a great stat to bring up, particularly on the podcast. We're trying to cover the breadth of like what happened in the last year since we talked.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my exciting part of the contribution to the podcast. Now, I will dance. What else do we used to do this on this podcast? I should add that Alex, who on the podcast, I guess we could refer to him as producer Alex, although he's also today he's telling people that he's chief of staff. But for the podcast, he's producer Alex. He's got all kinds of interesting plans for making the podcast better. We're gonna have we're thinking of having a live stream of it so that we can have a chat room going at the same time so that people can answer questions. We can have a limited audience that's actually listening as we do it. Mm-hmm. That might be kind of weird because if you're listening to the live stream, you're going to get stuff, you're going to hear stuff that's going to get deleted from the permanent transcript.
Well, one thing I'm very gung-ho about that I know worked well in the past, I'm open to many changes because I know your criticisms basically boil down to we need to improve it, which I can't disagree with that. Everything can be improved. And plus, we did it in such an off-the-cuff way that it's amazing it worked as well as it did, considering how off-the-cuff it was. So, yes, of course. But I think having guests is big. So I would actually ask everyone listening to this, we should revive the call for guests part of the...
That is correct. We need guests.
Yeah, part of the suggestion.
We're sort of like the old married couple that invites a guest over every Friday night so they don't stab each other at the dinner table.
Well, it's not so much that. It's that and your other criticism was, after a year of talking, we kind of started to repeat ourselves a little bit.
We were definitely repeating ourselves. It was getting to me.
And then again, what's the mission of Stack Exchange and Stack Overflow? It's not to put highly redundant content on the internet, right? That's not. Why would the podcast have a different mission? The podcast should be continually full of somewhat uniquely interesting or at least better formulated versions of what's already out there. And speaking of better formulated, did you want to talk about, I know you had an issue with like too localized, like how do you define like,
oh yeah.
One of the weird things that's happened is we figured out, let me give the background and then you can talk about it. We figured out sort of a set of close reasons of like things that don't work well for questions on our software. And it doesn't mean they're bad questions. It doesn't mean you should not ask these questions and you're a terrible person for even thinking of this question, but they just don't work well on our sites.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple really stalwarts, like not a real question, which is the question is too broad. It's like we can't even tell what the question is. That's what you start with. And then there's just off topic, which is you have boundaries around this is what the site is about. It can't be about everything. Or then you have Yahoo Answers. So that's off topic. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are like bedrock. These are really good reasons. But one of them is too localized. And when we say too localized, we don't mean like,
location.
Location. We mean location in time, as in this is only relevant like for 2 minutes yesterday and not ever again.
Yeah.
Too localized in perhaps a topic. Like you wrote your own programming language and you're curious about the syntax of your own programming language. That wouldn't be a great question because, it's too localized.
What's an example?
Is you can attack that.
What's an example of... the skeptics guys challenged me to come up with an example of too localized in time because you could take, for example, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, right? The bullet hit his head. It was only 1 second. It was only 1 second long and then it was over. The assassination was done and over. But yet.
Well, let me give you an example. I can give you an example from like gaming. It's like, what is the release date of
GameX? Okay. That's a good one. That's a good one.
When is GameX coming out? It's like, okay, well, that's a fixed point in time and, there's just nothing really useful there, and it'd only be relevant or like, for example,
I mean, you might want to close it afterwards. You might want to leave it open while it's still true.
One that I've deleted on Stack Overflow, and I think completely justifiably, is, when will the service pack for Visual Studio be released? And then it's released and it's just out. It's like, well, just go get it. It's like,
yeah, then you can close that.
There's no point in discussing like when will X come out because yes, it's going to come out. It'll come out a certain date. And then from that point on, it's just out and you just go get it.
Yeah. Well, you can close the question then.
Information contained there.
All right, so there will be at the end of this podcast after the music. Do we have music, producer Alex? We can add He says we can add music later. At the end of the, maybe not on this particular, but the end of this podcast, you will hear me ranting about Too Localized from a previous call. Jeff, you were there with the community people that we did last week, so we recorded that, and we'll throw that on as a postscript if you want to hear more about Too Localized. But basically, you know, what I was seeing, which was starting to irk me, is that people saw this close reason as Too Localized, and then the question was like, where's a good place for a programmer to work in Montreal? And they would say, that's Too Localized. Montreal is just one city. And yeah, it is one city, but then again, that's just like saying that, you know, a question about Lisp is Too Localized because there aren't that many programmers who use Lisp. It's like, it is localized. It's not too localized. There are more programmers in Montreal than there are Lisp programmers. Trust me, this is true. It is absolutely true. I promise you.
Well, I think it's still a judgment call. I mean, you're just trying to give people guidance. The risk that we have a lot of times when we bless things. Like, we've blessed this as a valid reason to close stuff. It doesn't mean you have to stop using your brain to think about how do the rules apply.
Well, that's the trouble, is that people do stop using their brain. Or else, I mean, this is the only source that they have for learning about this is from the Vote to Close dialog box. And they see Too Localized. And to me, you know, the example that that I've been given is Too Localized is, why is there a green Honda Civic in front of my house? It's Too Localized because it's just your house. And it's just that one Honda. And it's not even going to be there tomorrow. So, you know, and who cares? Is it still there? Is it even still there? Go check if it's still there. It's probably not even still there. And your house, like, who the hell cares? That's just like too. It is a question. It is on topic. It's not subjective. It's objective. It is a real question. But it stands no chance of getting answered in a way which either it cannot get answered because nobody knows because it's just in front of your house, or if it does get answered, it's not really going to benefit anybody except for you because nobody cares because it's just too tiny a zone, domain, or whatever.
And well, I think the right frame of mind is, you know, how many people are going to benefit from this question being asked? And I think it's really in your interest and really everyone's interest for you to try to ask questions that can apply to as many people as possible, not to an absurd degree where you can never ask about anything too small, but like, think about the people answering. Like, what's their incentive to answer? I mean, right. If it's only helping you, then that's not really making the world any better. But if you can just generalize it a little bit, that's sort of our guidance. Like, don't ask the most specific possible version question. Try to generalize a little bit so more people will think, hey, I had that problem once, or, oh, I know somebody that had a problem, or, ooh, it would really suck if I had that problem. Mm-hmm. Whereas I can't put myself in your shoes if you're saying, you know, I just walked out the street and there's a pothole and that sucks on my street.
Yeah.
But if it's like, hey, why can't we have better paving in the city so we don't have potholes everywhere? It's like, wow, all of a sudden, hey, now I'm interested in answering your question.
Becomes useful.
So I think it's a philosophical question, but it has value. I think what set Joel off, and Joel, I think to explain this, I think somebody was just messing with you on Meta. Joel had asked something about Stack Overflow Dev Days, which is coming, right?
Yes, 2011 Dev Days, yes.
Somebody had flagged it for close as Too Localized, and I thought it was funny because you got to realize this is Meta Stack Overflow. Like, nothing that really happens there is 100% serious, except when it's deadly serious.
So I was trolled.
So anyway, I don't think they were serious about that particular case, but I totally...
No, but I had seen this in a lot of other places, and yes. It came up on Skeptics where they decided that they shouldn't talk about the earthquake that was then happening in Japan because that was too localized, and that was just ridiculous. And they were specifically saying it's not a problem of the location. In that case, it was too short a period of time because it's just the one earthquake and we don't have all the information. And the question itself was about, you know, what is the current status or something of our knowledge about the earthquake, and it might change. And so it wasn't a hopelessly misguided close reason. I think it was just in that particular case wrong, and I think there is something, Jeff, which I keep complaining about, and I put it on Meta, and probably everybody's ignoring me, but the wording that we have on the closed dialogue says not generally applicable to the worldwide audience of the internet.
Well, let me give. I have a better example. I know what you're going to say, and I think I have a good example of.
Well, I'm just going to say what you're saying. Nothing on any. None of the questions on any of the Stack Exchange sites are generally applicable to the worldwide audience of the internet. I don't think there are any topics.
Math is as universal.
Is generally applicable to the worldwide audience of the internet. Yeah, but some people just don't need the answer to that particular math equation. They just don't care, and so it's like generally applicable to the worldwide audience of the internet. That's a really bar. I think possibly the internet will be closed effective tomorrow. Get your porn somewhere else.
You know, world that peace would be is a high bar applicable. Too. I mean, world peace is a high bar too, but it's not like we're going to stop working towards it.
But you can't tell people
takes a long time close, to get there.
Fine,
right?
But you can't tell people close every question that's not generally applicable to everyone everywhere in the world on the internet.
Well, you have to realize that it's not really a problem. Like, we're not seeing too much problems with people massively going out of their way to close things as too localized. But let me give you a good counterexample that supports what you're trying to say. And this came up on startups, answers.onstartups.com, which is one of the few imported Stack Exchange sites within the 2.0 network. And somebody was asking about localized. Like, what about business regulations when I have to tag the question? I'm asking about business regulations in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know. And then you came in and said, wait a minute, Jeff. And I think absolutely correctly that when you're talking about business, sometimes you have to be, you know, scoping to a country. And I don't think a country is necessarily too localized. When I said too localized, the spirit of it was like, hey, I want to have a meetup in Dublin with other programmers. You know, who's with me?
Yeah.
You know, that's not really a good question for Stack Overflow, right?
Well, that one's off
topic.
But
I think you had a great point about on the startup site, I think sometimes you need to be localized to be correct, right? For the question to be useful, it has to be scoped a little bit. You can't say, what are the business laws for me starting a business, period.
Right. It's just, it's really important to say, like, let's say it's tax, you know, what are the tax regulations or what are the employment regulations or whatever. For those ones, I mean, that's literally just tagging that UK, US, Canada is just like tagging a question C# or Java. You have to know it to get the right answer. And yes, it necessarily says if you're a Java programmer that this particular C# question does not apply to you because it's about a different programming language, just like this UK question doesn't apply to you because you're in Canada. You know, so what? That doesn't mean it's too localized. It is location bound, but it's not too localized. Again, to me, it's like, hey, I'm on the high street in Dublin right now. And if any of you are here right now, I'd love to meet up.
Right. Well, I wouldn't go quite that far, but I think what's exciting to me about this stuff is like I like educating people about like how do you ask a good question? It's something that like is a lifelong effort. Like how do you provide a good answer? How do you ask a good question? To the extent that we can educate people, like, look, these aren't hard and fast rules. It's not like, you know, and programmers love this binary view of the world. It's like, well, it's either too localized or not too localized. I'm like, well, no, it's a continuum. You know, you got to like judge it based on the merits of the question. And the examples that Joel and I just worked through will help people understand, you know, here's 5 or 6 examples of where you would use this and how it can be used. I think that's really important to having a healthy system of knowledge is understanding like why we have these closed reasons and judging for yourself whether they make sense or not for you.
Now, if you want to get into a whole debate, let's say this for next week. Is the whole debate over why does my code not work right now? Please help me with this code. And the trouble with those is we don't like them.
Good.
They don't help the internet. It's only going to be useful once. People come on, they ask them, and everybody knows the answer because it's like you forgot a semicolon. And so they get 3 or 4 good answers, and the answers get voted on, and they solve their problem. And Stack Overflow helped that one person, and those people that answered it had fun. But the one problem here is compared to everything else that happens on Stack Overflow, you haven't left an artifact that makes the internet better.
I have a good example of where this can be useful. If you have a specific error message that's specific to doing something wrong, like an error code, or then other people will encounter that error code at some point. They'll search for it, and they'll be like, oh, cool, here's how I fix this error code. I had a blog entry on Coding Horror that was exactly that. It was so painful. It was like, I'm going to write this up because this sucks so much. And I've talked about this before, actually. But it's the same basic principle. It's like shared pain. It's like diffusion of pain, actually. That's great, but the scenario that Joel's describing is someone made just a goofball error of like, this is what I call the I forgot to turn it on error. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, my computer doesn't work, and then you troubleshoot, and it's like, oh, the power was unplugged.
Right.
It's like, well, that is not great. I mean, you might learn troubleshooting. the only thing you might learn, Joel, is like, okay, your computer's not booting up. Well, let's try this. So if someone said, my computer's not booting up, they would go through the troubleshooting that other people had put, even though the answer was ridiculous. It was like, okay, well, plug it in. They might find something there that's helpful if there's good troubleshooting. So it's not entirely without merit, but I definitely don't like those class of questions. I really do tend to delete them when I see them because I feel – unless the answers are just like incredible troubleshooting guidelines.
Guidelines, yeah.
But most of the time when what you're describing, it's like a guy going or a gal going, line 5, put a semicolon at the end, period.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, accepted answer, you know? But if it's this awesome, I will never delete awesome answers. Like, let me just tell you, people might get scared by me saying I delete stuff from Stack Overflow. It's like gardening, right? I'm getting rid of weeds. I'm getting rid of, you know, plants that need to be, you know, end of their life anyway. We're trying to make room for the garden to grow.
I don't know. I'm just looking. I'm just sort of browsing around on Stack Overflow, and I'm seeing an awful lot of questions that are not generally applicable.
Well, it depends how you judge it. I can't see what you're looking at.
Yeah, you're right. That's why we need the video version of this podcast, which producer Alex will work on. A lot of times there are enough keywords in their particular question, like they're asking about a particular library, they're trying to do a particular thing, that it becomes generally applicable almost because they've just mentioned enough keywords.
And also, too, remember it's a long tail situation where it's not necessarily a broken window. It's not showing you the wrong thing. It may not be showing you the right thing, but it's not actively harmful necessarily. I don't know. It'll just never really get seen by anybody. You know, it'll be put on. Somebody will get the answer to their question, which is not terrible. But, you know, maybe nobody else gets helped by it. That's not entirely our mission. It's not the world's worst thing to happen.
Right.
And I think it's a process of ongoing education.
Well, we have to remember that Stack Overflow is two things. It's a factory that generates questions and answers, and you can get some benefit just by being in the factory where it's warm. And it also leaves artifacts. It produces something, which are these kind of remains for the internet of like, hey, if you're searching for that particular thing, we've already got an answer for you. And most of the value of Stack Overflow, by far, just based on the number of views, comes from the artifact, right? It comes from leaving something behind, not the person getting their question answered, or the people having fun answering it, or any of that stuff. But what goes on in the factory is just a small fraction of the value we generate for the internet, as evidenced by the fact that 90% of our traffic is Google, people coming in and finding answers, hopefully, and leaving. You know, the answers that are already there that were already generated by the factory. So basically, the heat that the factory is throwing off is like, yeah, you can go into the factory and get warm right now, but it's really the stuff that the factory is producing and sending all over the world that provides most of the value. So these questions on there, it's like, hey, how do I get a semicolon? It's like, you just took a free ride on the heat in the factory. You're not really helping the internet get better.
And I think, too, you have to realize that some of the people maybe at the factory essentially get promoted into management. Like they start owning the factory, mm-hmm. and they become, like, let me give you an example. Like I recently went on I forget which Stack Exchange site it was. I think it was Webmasters, Pro Webmasters. And one of my questions had gotten to 1,000 views. I was mm-hmm. like, wow. So I got a little, you know, perk for that. I got a badge for it saying, hey, you asked something that a lot of people found. So we are directly and indirectly in so many different ways, incentivizing creation of things that are actually useful to other people mm-hmm. through somebody else voted on it, somebody else viewed it, right? At a very minimum. And then beyond that, there's just all, like you said, the warmth of the factory of like, wow, I'm part of this thriving community where what these people value is A, programming. They all love the same things that I love, and B, like creating useful crap, mm-hmm. right? Not like, you know, discussion and noise and stuff that's just okay, it's fun, we can argue about the merits of Java versus .NET forever, but like, who are we really helping at the end of the day, you know?
And that is why how things work will be awesome.
That's the factory to me is that. And then also, speaking of warmth of the factory, I like that terminology, we had our worldwide Stack Overflow meetups.
Mm-hmm. World Stack Overflow meetup day, too localized, closing, next topic.
That's right, closed. But that was actually a lot of fun. I had the choice of going to the San Francisco one or the Mountain View one, and I kind of helped set up the Mountain View one because it had some issues. And I got to say, it was tremendous fun. Like, I'm actually, you know, looking forward to doing that. And I think that's again, warmth of the factory, the fact that you have an actual community of people that are, you know, interested in finding out about each other, not just the questions, but, you know, the context of who these people are and what they're doing. And
I thought we weren't all about the community. We were all about the questions and the answers.
Well, we are. But my point is that stuff happens.
You have flipped. Your position is flipped on this matter.
You're
like, we're not Facebook. We don't want to make friends. We're not social networking. We're all about just the facts.
Right, but the third place, like the way we have chat, which we haven't actually talked about on the podcast. I mean, chat is not integrated into our site and actually never will be, because I think that would be a really bad piece of advice. And you'll know that chat on Facebook is, in fact, integrated.
Is it?
That, to me, would be a key design decision. We will not integrate chat into the
chat on Facebook?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you haven't seen it?
Is that new? There's like IMing. You can like IM people.
It's full-blown chat. No, there's full-blown chat.
Like there's rooms you can go into and chat with people?
There's a pop-up div, and you just start chatting with somebody else on Facebook.
Well, that's like one person. That's like an IM.
But that's...
not the same.
Okay. I don't know if it's a chat. Okay.
That's more like a call.
The point is, you can talk to another person one-on-one.
All right.
I mean, our chat supports that. You can create a room. You can go into a room that just has one other person in it. What's the difference between that and an IM? None.
Right, but the point of chat Stack Overflow style and just IRC style in general is like there's a room where there's people hanging out. You go in there, you shout out to everybody. You never know who's going to be there. You can have interesting conversations all at once. It's not like a private conversation with a specific person. It's more like a social activity of, hey, let's go see who's at the bar, and I'll just chat with who's ever there.
Well, let me draw some other parallels with chat. So the physical meetups are a totally different vector, right? First of all, physical. It's not, you know, we're seeing people, we're talking, we're touching each other.
It's kind of scary.
Extensively. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
And whereas in chat, you know, it's very real time. It's very different than the Q&A, although our Q&A does happen fast enough. You could consider it real time. That's not really the point of the web. The web spends all its time breaking down time. You know, you could hit a page that's 5 years old that has universal truth.
Yeah, that is exactly the point, actually. And in fact, there's
a 5-year-old chat room is going to be fairly useless for the most part.
No, but also think about all the features that our chat has that traditional chat doesn't, that make it work better over time. Like IRC nothing was keeping a log of what happened in the room until you went in there, and therefore when you entered a room, you had no idea what had just been said in the room. And with our chat, when you go in, you can sort of see what happened, and what that means is that you can have a chat room in which no two people are really there at the same time. They're just kind of leaving messages for each other, and it still kind of works. It's slower. It's much higher latency.
I guess what I'm getting at is it's also like the podcast. It's another vector. It's a different way
we're going to have
of achieving related goals.
Yeah,
but you don't smush them all together. That's sort of where, from a design perspective, I say, okay, now you're starting to screw up. Like, you're getting chocolate and you're peanut butter.
You know, should we talk about Dev Days? Because that's the next big, that's the meta meetup.
Sure, sure. So we segued from the meetups, which are on meetups.com/Stack Overflow, and we're going to hopefully schedule more of those.
Yeah, I think what happens is now it's up to the individual people in the cities just to keep meeting every month if they get their acts together.
I think we'll have to push a little bit more for it really to happen.
Maybe we can try. I mean, I think what almost always happens is that the top cities, it happens, and then it sort of fades out. And that's actually a little bit intentional. We talked about this with regard to Meetup. Like the meetup.com software, their whole method is not designed to make it super easy to have a meetup. Let's put it that way. It really kind of sets I'm not saying that it's hard to use. I'm saying that the design is you guys got to want to meet in person, because if we make it too easy to use the website, then you'll just sign up for a whole bunch of meetups and you'll never go to any of them, and there's no point in doing that. We need to make it like a little bit. There has to be enough friction on the website that we know that a reasonable percentage of these people actually really do want to meet the other people, like they care.
Right. Well, this is the same philosophy of Area 51.
Right. Exactly.
Government process. It's meant to be a little painful.
Yeah, it has to be painful enough just to make sure that, because otherwise you just get nothing. Make it too easy.
Right. I certainly encourage us to at least push them like every 6 months or so. I enjoyed it tremendously. Mm-hmm. And that's a good segue into Dev Days. So tell us what's going on with Stack Overflow Dev Days.
What is Stack Overflow Dev Days? Oh, yes. The first Stack Overflow Dev Days, I think we might have to name it the Stack Overflow Conference, because it's not days anymore. It looks like it's going to be 2 days. All right. So the first one was in 10 cities. We did this in 2009. It was in 10 cities, 1 day each. And I organized for each city 5 or 6 speakers to talk about give tutorials. The idea was they would be tutorials on programming topics that a lot of programmers really wanted to learn, but they didn't have time to learn as a part of their regular day-to-day job, just because, you know, they were stuck in the Java coal mines or whatever. So it was fun stuff like iPhone development and maybe Python, Ruby, jQuery, a lot of stuff that people wanted to learn and didn't necessarily have an opportunity to learn in their day job. And so it's the same theme this year. We're going to want to teach you some stuff that you may want to learn. And maybe it's probably going to be different things this year. It's going to be stuff like, I don't know, Redis and Node and stuff like that everybody wants to learn this year. But, you know, they don't get to use in their day jobs. And then We're not going to do 10 cities because that was just heart attack inducing. It was just too much work, and it was like utterly crazy. We're going to do 4, and they're going to be in one's going to be in London, one's going to be U.S. East Coast, probably in and around Washington D.C. area. One's going to be U.S. West Coast, which I believe will be either Seattle or San Francisco, depending on the venues that we find. And the fourth one is Australia, Sydney or Melbourne, again depending on the venue. They're going to be September and October, and they're going to be 2-day conferences, so 2 days in each place. The other big difference is instead of me organizing 60 speakers for all these things, I'm going to sort of throw it out there for the meta, and the meta people are somehow going to find the people that they want to speak at their damn conferences and organize it. I don't know how. It's going to be very crowdsourced.
Well, cool. Sounds like fun.
That is the big picture.
And so how many cities total?
4.
4. Okay.
4 but cities. It's 2 days
worldwide.
Each. It's worldwide in the sense that there's going to be one that's, you know, a reasonable distance from most of our audience. Last time, I mean, I could go through all the details, but for example, like last time, Austin was fun. It was cool, but we just did not have enough people. It was just not possible to do in a break-even way. It's just too much work mm-hmm. to go to Austin for the number of people. And same with Los Angeles. So there were 2 cities that were just too small. And then Cambridge, we did Cambridge because Redgate really wanted us to go to Cambridge. But honestly, those people would have just come to London, right? Come on. It's like a 45-minute train ride. So so we can reduce some of those cities without too much loss. And the thing that surprised us about the first dev days is a ton of people actually flew to get there. And what a lot of people told us this time is, look, as long as I'm flying anyway, doesn't matter where I fly to, as long as it's in the same approximate range, and you might as well make it 2 days, you know, so I can get more out of it for the trip.
Yeah, overall, I mean, I think the old dev days were quite good. At least the ones I went to, I felt were successful. I didn't have any major criticisms. I think logistics was the only one, and that's like a universal constant with conferences. It's like logistics is a pain.
Only this year we actually have 3 full-time conference organizers working at Stack Exchange Incorporated. It's hard to believe, but nice. We will have incredibly awesome logistics that will go extremely smooth. Producer Alex will change into conference producer Alex for the purpose of that, and he'll do all our AV and set up, and it's gonna be awesome. Hey, we remember we had there was a rather humorous video that we made at the beginning of the previous dev days.
Oh, yes.
Which we managed
to... urged Joel to release. He's like, no, I can't.
No, it's just too embarrassing. And you know what? I'm embarrassed to say, I wanted to save the last copy of it because I wanted to show it to producer Alex, only it was only on my laptop at home, which was the laptop I actually used at the conference that I actually took around on dev days and broadcast it from. And the hard drive in that, it's an SSD. It's an Intel X25M, the SSD that everybody loves, just like all of a sudden failed yesterday. It like completely died.
I have a topic here. This is something I was actually thinking about blogging because it's like it's happening so often.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, SSDs are awesome.
Yeah.
But they tend to fail, I mean, in the most catastrophic way imaginable. It's basically like the old, Mission Impossible, where this message will self-destruct in it's literally like that.
Oy.
It's like one day it's working, and then in 10 seconds, bam, all your data is gone. And I mean all of it. Like there
so
is
I think
no
that's
recovery.
Where I am now. That's it. Then nobody's ever going to get to see this awesome video I made with the interns.
I have a low-res copy of it, actually, but it's low-res. Mm. That's probably sufficient for producer Alex's needs. Mm.
It's all right. I don't want him to see it. It's
you gave me a really low-res copy because you didn't trust me. Like, okay, you have to have a copy. I'll give you this really crappy copy. Because you're going to post it on YouTube. I didn't, actually, but
thank you.
I'm glad I have a copy of it.
There has to be a reason to go to the conference. There has to be something awesome that happens at the conference. Oh, boy, we got something awesome.
Well, this is well after the conference, though. This is a totally different argument. But
yeah.
It's fine. It's your decision. If you don't want to show it to anyone, I'm not going to.
I'm just embarrassed by it. It's just hopelessly embarrassing.
Yeah. So SSD is still awesome, but.
But they fail.
Better have a really good backup.
Why do they fail? It's hardware.
I think you'll agree. I'm the world international expert on backups. Am I not?
Yeah. In fact,
when I tell you need to back up your SSD much more than your regular hard drive, then you should really listen to me.
The truth is, I no longer put anything on laptops. I have no files on laptops. I have them on Dropbox.
Are you in the cloud? It's just like those commercials I see on television. Are you in the cloud?
I am. I have you can give me any laptop, Mac or PC, and I will put on it Microsoft Office, Dropbox, and Evernote, and Chrome. And then I'll sync Chrome with the bookmarks and the LastPass and all that kind of crap. And that's it. That's like 100% of what I need to do, everything. No local files.
But LastPass is, if you get subpoenaed, the authorities are going to take your secret Dropbox data.
Yeah, so what? So they'll find out that how much I paid.
That was just funny because it was like all this backlash. It was like, okay,
yeah.
If you get subpoenaed right. And the FBI are looking at your stuff, it's like, you're pretty screwed. I don't think it really matters if they can decrypt your secret Dropbox.
They're probably just going to tell you to decrypt it, and then there'll be a court order, and then you'll say, no, I don't want to, and then you're going to go to jail. Have fun with that.
Exactly. And you know what? You know how much I really hate to quote XKCD, because I have a love-hate relationship with XKCD now, because I've just seen so many of them, and it's like everywhere I go, I can't get away from XKCD. It's not that it's good. But like, have you – the one I'm referring to is perfect for this. It's like the hacker's view of like encryption is like, you know, the FBI will get your laptop. It's like, oh, we're going to need a supercomputing cluster to crack this. Mm-hmm. We don't think we'll be able to do it. And then the next panel is, take this $5 wrench and beat the crap out of this guy until he gives you the password.
Exactly. And actually, you know what? 99.99% of the people in the world do not have anything that anybody wants on their damn stinking laptop or in their Dropbox. Especially like these 19-year-old computer science students. And it's like, what do you have on there exactly that the FBI is going to want? Porn.
Well, plus if you actually do...
I read a good book. Poker. That would be really bad. He put poker on a laptop.
I read this book recently. I need to blog about it, but it was talking about sort of like modern crime on the internet. Mm-hmm. And it revolves mostly around credit card numbers. And I think one of the guys, he got caught in like Turkey.
Oops.
And that was not good. That's not a good place to get caught for anything, apparently.
Yeah.
And he had a whole bunch of encryption on his laptop that there's no way they could actually break it. But it was the $5 wrench approach, I think.
Right. It's like, no problem.
Kind of made it happen.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So then
back to the top of the call, my approach is like, well, why even have secrets? Like, what's the point of secrets?
Because you're breaking the law.
Well, I don't want to equate somebody having a secret with breaking the law. I just want to equate secrets.
That's
with
the only reason you
idea.
Need to have secrets. Oh, okay.
I don't think it's really a good idea to have a lifestyle where you have a lot of secrets.
Where you depend on
it's
secrets.
It's just not really a sustainable life strategy. So therefore, I don't know. I mean, unless people are trying to steal stuff, that's not. I don't know.
I
mean,
I could come
a
up
bunch
with
of caveats
a few hundred
around. I can't speak for everyone, but
it's not always
as a business strategy for us. Being a public company that runs public websites, it's really hard for me to come to terms with super mega secrecy about a bunch of stuff. I don't know. I feel like we get a lot of reasonably good feedback when we're open about stuff, even when we don't understand what we're doing. And, you know, we're trying to. And that's another reason I missed the podcast, because I think, and people brought this up multiple times, was that we would make decisions and people had no visibility into the decisions because they couldn't sort of hear our inner monologue about, like, wow, we're really struggling with how we do this
X,
stuff.
X, Y, or Z. I mean, to some extent.
The outside.
Yeah, you do have to be a real groupie to listen to the podcast, follow the blog, read Meta. Like,
well, not necessarily. The information gets disseminated. So what happens is somebody will blog about it.
Yeah.
Information gets disseminated. It's not like you have to listen to the podcast and follow our every, you know, nuance. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hey, one of the things I just saw, which we might be able to use for this podcast, is the SoundCloud. Eric from SoundCloud was over here visiting us today. They have this sort of technology where you get, I have to describe it because we don't have video yet, but your whole podcast is shown in a timeline left to right. And as you scrub your mouse over the timeline, you see comments that people have left at different points in the timeline. And you also see them as it's playing. So you could be sitting there listening to the podcast and looking on the web, and you're actually seeing comments that people have, like text comments that people have attached to the podcast at various times.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, that's good for if you want to scrub the particular conversation. Like, oh, Joel talked about.
Well, it's also really interesting because you get sort of the inside baseball, like the color commentary from the crowds. You get the peanut gallery just sort of thrown
I think that's
in
actually a bad feature. The only part of that I like is when you would annotate the parts of the conversation that were like, okay, then we talked about this, then we talked about this, then we talked about this.
Well, that'll happen. That'll be the organized show notes anyway. But this is almost like, what the heck is Joel talking about here? And then somebody else can chime in and say, oh, he's talking about such and such a thing, and have a link to it. On the other hand, you're right. It's the peanut gallery. You may get YouTube-style comments that are just garbage.
I'm skeptical about that particular thing. But certainly, I like having longer show notes for people who just don't want to listen to the show.
Yeah. That's actually pretty important because
that I think was a big win in the past because I refer to those show notes still. Like I'll remember
we used to have the transcripts.
Yeah, the transcripts are a big ask though. Everybody who did that, thank you a million times, thank you. But yeah. Man, that's a big ask.
That's a lot of work to sit there and type all the crap.
That's a lot of work. So now I think we might do something a little different there.
Yeah, we might try to do something more focused where if there's a particular thing that. Our listeners judge to be kind of worthy of, what's the word I'm looking for? Of going on the permanent record, so to speak, and they could transcribe it just that bit.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Well, we're getting close to about an hour here, so I think we should sign off the podcast for this week.
And just let everybody know there's, exciting more changes to come. This is not just the first step is... getting back on the horse.
That's right. We are on the horse, but pretty much every week or two from now on. Well, this podcast is already different because I have a live audience. that was the punion.
Yeah. Nice.
And we've got to figure out a better place to do it other than at my desk right here out in the middle of Stack Exchange World Headquarters because the people will come and start playing table tennis over there and they'll be the pickpocket of the ping pong and the steaming sounds from the coffee machine and so forth. We have a long list of improvements to the podcast. We want to get live streaming. We want to get video optional, totally optional, so that we can occasionally show you screenshots of interesting things. And I'm going to have an actor playing my part and moving his mouth along with me. And
and also guests. Don't forget guests.
Chat room and a lot of guests. Yeah, we want to have guests. We want to have recurring guests. Tell us who you want. We've got, we have, well, the old podcast, there were, three people working at the entire Stack Overflow, all told? And now we have 25. So there's, worst comes to worst. We can always rope in one of these guys.
We can also, I think, rope in people from individual communities, too.
Right. We can get the community.
That takes a little bit more planning, to be clear. I'm not making any promises here. But
right.
We have really interesting, like Joel was pointing out in his stats. I mean, these are not programmers. They're coming from a different perspective. So it might be interesting to hear from some of them.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So if you like today's podcast, take a $20 bill, put it in an envelope, and write Joel Spolsky, Stack Exchange Incorporated, 1 Exchange Plaza, New York, New York, 10006. And see you next week.
Want to get your guys' feelings on the idea of
Let me tell you, I want to
saying...
announce my feeling about too localized. My feeling is that people have way, way, way too low a bar for what it means to be too localized. They think people thought Dev Day's 2011 questions are too localized because they're only about the 2011 conference. I mean, okay, so we can never talk about that? That's like ridiculous. To me, an example of a too localized, the minute somebody starts to get too hyper with too localized, and you guys can yell at me because I wasn't there when this whole too localized thing became a thing. Too localized is, why is there a green Honda Civic parked in front of my house? That's too localized. That's my example of too localized, right? Because it just affects one person, and it's not going to be there tomorrow. Nobody can possibly know the answer because it's so specific. It's just like, it's the Honda Civic in front of your house right now? Like, is it still there? that's too localized. That can't be answered because it's too localized. But talking about Fukushima, what do we have to wait for the history books to close on this thing? That's ridiculous.
These are exactly the kind of questions we want, too, for our Spark PR projects. And it was a little bit of a concern that this hot topic is being closed because it's a developing news story, and it's only in the question is worded for a specific point in time. And that I just want to get, again, it's to get your sort of philosophical opinion that we sort of somehow. I'll give you another example. Just that I don't have.
I gotta tell you, this whole thing of like this hot current event stuff. We're not really a news site. Like, I don't know. This is a little bit force fitty to me. It's like we're wedging this round peg in the square hole.
No,
a little
wait
bit.
A minute. To say is Fukushima as bad as Chernobyl? That's on topic for skeptics. And to then say, we don't want this
fair.
Because Fukushima is still ongoing, like we don't have all the data yet. You could say that, but
okay,
you couldn't
that's
say
fine.
Too
local. I can agree with that. I can agree with that.
I think that right now we don't have a clear enough I don't know where this might be. I mean, maybe there'd be meta discussion, but I think some people just sort of see the terms for they're like, hey, I don't like this question. They hit close, and they learn about too localized from that one sentence. And it says the question is only relevant to a small geographic area, a specific moment in time, extraordinarily narrow situation is not generally applicable to the worldwide audience of the internet. And I think worldwide audience of the internet, gosh, that's kind of a high bar for something to be applicable
well,
to the world.
I think you should go
audience.
Plead your case on that specific one. That specific one. I guess the thing I'm objecting to is this idea that we would like seek out current events and like that's okay, a
that's
little
a,
bit demand needed.
That's a different. That's a different. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. That's a different question.
Okay. For this one, I'm agreeing with you. For the one that got closed, I see your point. I think they had the wrong idea. But I don't. You got to realize the skeptics guys are guys. It's probably all guys.
Yeah.
It always is, right? I think they're just very gung-ho. And I think as long as you give them guidance, they will understand. Like, I don't think they'll fight with you. You just need to go in there and plead your case. They're pretty
okay.
easy to deal with.
I'm happy to do that. One thing that I – just because I keep noticing this too localized, like, and it seems to be way too trigger-happy, I'm tempted
Where
to
Where else
suggest,
have you seen this?
I don't know. It just keeps coming up.
I'll tell you, the most egregious –
actually keep coming up. Too localized is not really a problem.
Well, actually, what I should do is search on closed for too localized. Yes, I've seen votes for close to too localized on Dev Days 2011 questions.
Yeah, but that's just people being dumbasses. That doesn't even really
count. Well, the problem is that they think, because the user interface tells them this, they think that if something has any kind of time in it or any kind of place, that it should be closed.
Yeah, but this is like people that misread the Bible.
I know, but that's what they do.
Things.
That's
not
what they do,
my
and
fault.
It's driving me crazy. I'm not blaming anyone. It's obviously Payan's fault. There's no need to blame anyone.
It's understanding a little bit about the philosophy, like not right. looking to the list of close reasons to that they always apply to why questions should be closed. That's not the Bible. It's
right.
It's if you have to close a question that you feel is closed, we give you a set of reasons, but not the other way around.
I think that's an important segue.
I was going to segue into the whole idea. Well, let me talk about that in a minute.
Go in there and plead your case, Joel. I do agree with you.
I'm going to plead my case there. I'm going to actually argue also. I'll go on Meta and I'm going to say, listen, I think we need to slightly change the wording in the closed dialogue box, because saying not applicable to the worldwide audience of the internet is just too high a bar. None of our questions are applicable to the worldwide audience of the internet. And
there was a large group of skeptics who thought they were correct in closing a question that said, is it difficult to be like an atheist in the United States or something like that? Is there, and so it said the United States, that's too localized.
Yeah. This is an important thing to teach people about, because I'm seeing too much of it. It's just programmers. That's just their attitude. They're just like, oh, wait, you just mentioned a location. I remember some rule about locations. I will now go do something about that. And we really just need to tell people somewhere, listen, too localized means why is there a green Honda Civic parked in front of my house? That's an example of too localized. And tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, if there are more specific things. But I think the whole idea of too localized is like, you know, this is a vanishing thing. I mean, we have, for Christ's sake, 1/3 of the questions on Stack Overflow are one bug affecting one person in one place once. And they get answers,
but
nobody says
those are actually bad. I mean, you're supposed to bring up like, okay, let me give you an example. See, I don't know. This is a complex topic. Like, I think on like you had a valid point. This came up on answers on startups of like, okay, when I ask about UK business law,
right.
That has to be localized to UK, and it's still a pretty large audience, right? It's the freaking UK.
So just tag it UK. That's perfect.
Right. And that's a valid point. And I was like, okay, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
And then there's the other case on Stack Overflow where some jackass forgot a semicolon. So he posts his code, and he doesn't know, and
everybody
it's like, look,
says,
you forgot
a
semicolon.
Yeah.
This is not going to help anybody. Nobody's going to search for, I typed in exactly what you typed in, and I forgot a semicolon.
That's true.
So there actually is a valid case of, like, and accidentally, they didn't mean to do it. I'm not saying they're you know, bad people for doing this, but there is a reason that exists to emphasize to people, look, you're supposed to ask questions that other people can benefit from in some way that's not just about you. So that's really the lesson of too localized. And, you know, there's extreme examples of, you know, why is there a green car parked outside my house? And there's also much more subtle examples where people have, you know, they think they're doing the right thing and they kind of are, but it's still not really helping
the internet at large.
Well,
the
trouble is, I mean, I guess I'm open to rewarding it, but there is a legitimate reason that exists, and it does, in general, it works. So I don't know. I guess keep looking at it.
It's on my list. I'm going to keep talking about this until everybody
until everybody knows. It is a philosophy of, you know, you close questions that you feel should be closed, and we give you reasons, but it doesn't always necessarily work the other way around.